First Peter chapter 1. Look at verse 8. It says this, and though you have not seen him, you love him. And though you do not see him now, but believe in him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory. So we're coming down to the last two lessons on this series that I started actually back in December on the birth, life, and death. And throughout these lessons, it all started with us talking about, just in general, those that like to celebrate the birth of Jesus. But when we talked about it, it's not the birth that you're really celebrating. It's what he did. It's the fact that Jesus actually went to the cross and gave his life. Had he not done that, we would not have been celebrating any of that. And I know it's more of a worldly thing to focus on that. But really what's important is the death of Jesus. And we went through this birth, life, and death series with talking about the birth of Jesus, and then our birth, and then our physical lives, and the way we should live, and our spiritual lives, and what that's going to look like, and then comfort and death, and then the spiritual death and what would happen for those that go through that. But to bring us all home and is really the most important thing, and that's the death of Jesus. And I've done several lessons on Jesus's death, but I decided to do something slightly different than what I normally do. And when you think about somebody who is knowing they're going to die, or someone who's getting ready to die, there's a lot of emotions around that. There's a lot of things that happen, not just to you, but to those that are around you. And you know, when you think about, you know, the things that the person that, you know, think of someone who has cancer and they know they have weeks to live, there's a lot of sadness that takes place. There's a lot of loneliness. There's pain, and maybe even some regret. And I want to look at those emotions today when we talk about the death of Jesus. And the first emotion that I want us to look at is that of loneliness. Turn over with me to Luke 22. Luke 22. And starting in verse 54. It says, and having arrested him, so they arrested Jesus, they led him away and brought him to the house of the high priest. But Peter was following at a distance. After they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter was sitting among them. And a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the firelight and looking intently at him, said, this man was with him too. But he denied it, saying, woman, I do not know him. A little later, another saw him and said, you are one of them too. But Peter said, man, I am not. After about an hour had passed, another man began to insist, saying, certainly this man also was with him, for he is a Galilean too. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you are talking about. Immediately, while he was still speaking, a rooster crowed. Look at verse 61. This is the only verse, this is the only section you can find this in the gospel. Look at what it says. The Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had told him, before a rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. Even Peter wasn't on the Lord's side. Could you imagine the eyes of God, of Jesus, when he looked at Peter? And you know, Jesus knew this. He had already told Peter this. But could you imagine the loneliness that Jesus felt, knowing that he's been taken in now? And one of his own followers just denied him in front of everybody. You know, I can imagine that, you know, the disappointment that is realized in Peter's eyes, and we see it in the next verse, but we're going to save it for later. But the disappointment that Peter had after he recognized what he had done, But the fact is, you can't take back for that moment. Jesus was alone. Jesus was by himself with everyone that's around him that's arrested him. And here it is, the one person that has seen Jesus, that has been selected by Jesus, chose to allow Jesus to be lonely in that one moment. Turn over with me to Isaiah 53. Starting in verse 6. It says, all of us, like sheep, have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way. But the Lord has caused the iniquity of us all to fall on him. He was oppressed and he was afflicted. Yet he did not open his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to a slaughter, and like a sheep that is silent before its shears, so he did not open his mouth. So we see here that all of us like sheep have gone astray. So that, I mean, when you look at that, that means that no one is going to be with Jesus at this moment. That Jesus is doing this all on his own with nobody by his side. It's as if everyone forgot who Jesus was for this moment. But the other thing is, when you think about a sheep going to a slaughter, he's in this slaughterhouse. You know, when a sheep's in a slaughterhouse, the mom sheep's not there. The dad sheep's not there. The brother sheep isn't there. He's by himself, getting ready to be just killed for, you know, whatever reason it may be. But he's all alone in this building full of all these butchered animals. And he has no one to comfort him, no one to help guide him through this slaughtering that's about ready to take place. This sheep is alone. That's the thing, same thing that was with Jesus. He was alone. He was alone in this slaughtering that's about ready to take place. And he was alone because of you and I. Turn over with me to Matthew 27. Starting in verse 45. Matthew 27, starting in verse 45. It says, now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of those who were standing there, when they heard it, began saying, this man is calling for Elijah. Immediately one of them ran, and taking a sponge, he filled it with sour wine and put it on a reed and gave him a drink. But the rest of them said, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. So we see in verse 46 that even God, his own Father, had to leave him in this moment of pain, in this moment of torture. He allowed Jesus to go through more torture than really what needed to be, but he wanted to prove his love for us and that he was willing to put his son to death so that we don't have to go through a spiritual death. Which, could you imagine a father, though, knowing that for this moment he's not able to help his only begotten son? I can't imagine what that's like. But he did. And when we think about Jesus here and the loneliness that he has to feel, there is nothing more lonely knowing that even you don't have your Father, and in this case, God, by your side. Now, when we think about that emotion, there's other emotions that we really see throughout this time, but I'm not going to go through and read all the different emotions around this next one, because we talk about it all the time, and that's the pain that Jesus went through. You know, we could go through and read every gospel and you get in my opinion, a highlight of what they did to him, but what actually took place, we don't have in detail And if we had in detail the amount of pain that Jesus went through, I think every one of us here would be crying every day if we read that. I mean, between the scourging and the carrying of the cross and the crucifixion and the nailing in his hands and the twisting of the thorns. Could you just imagine? You know, when we think about just the twisting of the thorns on the head, you know, we want to think of just like a simple little crown. No, these thorns were thick. And by the time you slid that thing down his head, it was in so much pain that I can imagine you can see holes if they were taking that thing off. And so it wasn't something that was taken lightly. Like, there was severe pain that Jesus went through for each and every one of us. But it goes back to what I said earlier, that it's the pain. We would be going through the same pain in the spiritual life had Jesus not taken care of that in the physical one. And so as you're going through remembering this, and we just talked about this through the emblems that we just have been partaking, that it's severe, and that this pain is real, and that we should be so appreciative of it, and that every day we should wake up seeing that and recognizing that and living towards that. And if we do, it's going to help us be a better person. And so the third emotion that I want us to kind of dive into, that's sadness. Turn over with me to Luke 23. Luke 23, starting in verse 8. Now Herod was very glad when he saw Jesus, for he had wanted to see him for a long time, because he had been hearing about him and was hoping to see some sign performed by him. And he questioned him at some length, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes were standing there accusing him vehemently. And Herod, with his soldiers, after treating him with contempt and mocking him, dressed him in a gorgeous robe and sent him back to Pilate. Now Herod and Pilate became friends with one another that very day, for before they had been enemies with each other. We're going to make a comment in just a moment. Turn back with me to Matthew 27. Matthew 27, 27. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole Roman cohort around him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. And after twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand. And they knelt down before him and mocked him, saying, "Hail, King of the Jews." They spat on him and took the reed and began to beat him on the head. After they had mocked him, they took the scarlet robe off him and put his own garments back on him, and led him away to crucify him. How sad is this situation? That no one, that they don't believe Jesus. They don't believe that he's the Son. And they're mocking him by presenting him in this way that shows that he is some sort of king, as if he is some sort of godly figure or some righteous person. But they don't want to believe him. They want to make fun of him. How sad is it, though, for Jesus, though, to go his whole life, and living it in the way that you would have expected, in the last 3 years of his life, starts his ministry, going through all these different miracles, showing who he was, and yet people don't believe him. That is sadness. Because I can tell you right now, I know for a fact, that if I saw a man doing these things, there's no doubt I'm following that person. And I can tell you that from deep down inside. But for people not even to want to believe it, that to me boggles my mind. It's a sad situation. And then to put a man on a cross because of it makes it even worse. But you know, Jesus wasn't sad for him. He wasn't sad. He knew what he had to do. He had to go to this cross. But he was sad for some, though. Look at Luke 27 again. Oh, sorry, 23. There's no Luke 27. Luke 23. Look at verse 28. It says, but actually, let's just start at 27. And following him was a large crowd of the people, and of women who were mourning and lamenting him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, fall on us, and to the hills, cover us. For if they do those things when the tree is green, what will happen when it's dry? See, Jesus was sad for those around him. Jesus was sad for those who did not believe him. And there's going to be a day where the realization is going to be sad for a lot of people. And, you know, those here, to me, had no excuse. Specifically those who saw what he was doing and still didn't believe it. But there will be a sad day in which Jesus will be revealed in a way that everyone will fall down and worship him. Period. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And Jesus understood that. And so there is sadness for those who don't want to believe in him. And there is sadness for those who choose to live a life that daily crucifies him. That is real sadness. And that's where we all should be trying to change our mindsets and not living a life that will ultimately end up in pure sadness. And then the other and actually final emotion here is remorse. Turn over with me to Jude. We're going to talk about Judas, but Matthew 27. Matthew 27, verse 3. It says, then when Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that he had been condemned, he felt remorse and returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned by betraying innocent blood. But they said, what is that to us? See to it that yourself. And he threw the pieces of silver into the temple sanctuary and departed. And he went away and hanged himself. The chief priest took the pieces of silver and said, it is not lawful to put them in the temple treasury, since it is the price of blood. And they conferred together with the money, bought the potter's field as a burial place for strangers. For this reason, that field has been called the field of blood to this day. Then that which was spoken through Jeremiah, the prophet, was fulfilled. And they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of the one whose price had been set by the sons of Israel, and they gave them for the potter's field, as the Lord directed me. So we see Judas here. He's remorseful for what he's done to Jesus. He's remorseful in knowing that he is the reason that Jesus is arrested, and he is the reason, ultimately, that Jesus is crucified. But see, the thing with remorse is that there's an opportunity to move forward from it. And you know, Judas here could have been forgiven and moved on. In our lives, we have the opportunity for remorse, recognizing that the way we're living is not right, and that the way we're living is wrong, and that we need to change that. And I think that if you look at Jesus and his crucifixion, that what Judas did only brought out the one thing that actually crucified Jesus. That's sin. Sin is what crucifies Jesus. Every day, the more sin you can pile on yourself, the more and more that crucifixion gets tougher and tougher. And the more further and further away from you understanding what a crucifixion actually was meant for and why it's so important in our lives. Because Jesus' crucifixion ultimately saves us from an eternal damnation. Go back to Luke 22 for a moment. I said we're going to come back to this verse. Going to the end of 22, verse 62. And we read it earlier about Peter denying Christ. And then look what Peter does. And he went out and wept bitterly. Peter recognized what he did was wrong. Peter recognized that his decision was not the right one. And that's for us as well. We need to see the things that we're doing in this life. Recognize if they are right or if they are wrong. And if they're not right, let's change them. Let's change them before it's too late. And in the case of Judas, it was too late for him. He chose to end his life because of the pain it caused. Look at one chapter over, Luke 23. And it all comes down really to being remorseful. And then finally, this here, remorse turned into recognition. Look at verse 44, Luke 23:44. It was now about the sixth hour, and darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour, because the sun was obscured, and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And Jesus, crying out with a loud voice, saying, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." Having said this, he breathed his last. Now when the centurion saw what had happened, he began praising God, saying, "Certainly this man was innocent." And all the crowds who came together for this spectacle, when they observed what had happened, began to return, beating their breast. And all his acquaintances and the women who accompanied him from Galilee were standing at a distance, seeing the things. And we see in other gospel and about those who were coming out of the grave, those that had died. You know, here's my grandfather who died, you know, a year ago. He's coming out of the grave to show alive all of a sudden. You know, this was an event that not only showed that Jesus was real, but the things that after it happened confirmed it. It even proved it even more. So not only did Jesus' death prove it, but the things that took place after it confirmed it. And so for us today, being remorseful and recognizing the changes that we can make, because we understand that what Jesus did was true, it was real, and there was a purpose for it. And it's really our driving factor in our lives. Now I want to conclude in a couple verses, but let's go back to 1 Peter 1 for just a moment. Starting in verse 3 this time. It said, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to obtain an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you, who are protected by the power of God through faith for salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen him, you love him. And though you do not see him now, but believe in him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, obtaining as the outcome of your faith the salvation of your souls." And it all started with what Jesus did for you and I. But see, the thing is, there's one emotion we haven't talked about. You know, when you're... the thing that was shed the most on that day was blood. But you think about it. If your life doesn't have any blood, you're weak, you're emotionless, you're tired. But when you have a life that's full of blood, you're happy. And without the blood, we can't have any of that emotion. But when we look at what Jesus did, his blood leads us to happiness. And that's because his blood allows for us to see that there is something bigger and greater in the life after this one. And because he was willing to go to that cross, his blood allows for the proper flow in our lives. It's his blood that allows for us to go through things difficult in this life and still be joyful. It's his blood that allows for us to see things happen in this life and still be joyful. It's his blood that allows us to go to the Father in prayer and go to him with our concerns and come out of that and still be joyful. Without it, we would all be sad and we would all be lonely. And Isaiah 53:10 says that God, actually, let's go and read it. I do want to end with this. Isaiah 53:10. This is really the answer to the reason why it took blood. It says, but the Lord was pleased to crush him, putting him to grief. If he would render himself as a guilt offering, look at what it will do. He will see his offspring. He will prolong his days, and the good pleasure of the Lord will prosper in his hand. It says God was pleased to crush him. And to me, seeing his offspring makes so much sense, because that's exactly what you and I are. We are the offspring of God. We are in the same line of having a home with Jesus today. And it's because Jesus gave his life. It's because of the blood that he shed. And really, this is no doubt the greatest and most wonderful event in our life. And we should always find happiness and joy in that. And if you're struggling in this life, it's probably because you're not looking at that enough. Because there's no doubt that Jesus' death is there's nothing more important that's ever happened as a human being as that. Nothing. Because if you think about, if Jesus' death doesn't take place, what do you have? What do you have to live for? What are you moving on to next? Nothing. There's absolutely nothing to move to. There's nothing to be joyous about. And we've spent this whole series of talking of birth, life, and death to ultimately the main reason for this whole thing, and even our birth, life, and death. And that's Jesus Christ. And he did. He went to the cross for each and every one of us. And we really need to remember that every single day of our lives. And if we do, it will help us be better. We will be better people. We will be better towards others. And ultimately, we will be in a better place after this one. If there's anything that we can do to help lead you on the right path, please do so as together we stand and sing.